right, everyone. Welcome to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers here with Chicago Jazz Magazine and ChicagoJazz.com. This is our podcast that we do on ChicagoJazz.com. And Chris Potter is coming into the Jazz Showcase June 1st through the 4th. He also has a brand new album out coming out on ECM Records called The Dreamer is the Dream. And we were lucky enough to catch up with Chris over the phone and preview his show at the Jazz Showcase and also preview the new recording. So let's take a listen. All right, we're here with saxophone extraordinaire Chris Potter, who has a new recording out called The Dreamer is the Dream on ECM Records, but he's also coming into the Jazz Showcase June 1st through the 4th. Chris, thanks for taking a little time today to talk with us here.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, before we jump into the album, because on first listening to the album, there's a lot to talk about, that's for sure. But why don't we just start with a little bit? I know that you started playing saxophone at a very young age, and just reading up, you were born in Chicago but moved out when you were 3 years old, so that probably doesn't mean too much.
Yeah, I don't remember much except I remember snow. It's the only thing I remember.
Yeah. It's easy to remember snow in Chicago, as you know. But I remember seeing you play, and I'm you know, the probably close to the same age as you, but I'm nowhere near as advanced as you on the instruments. I remember seeing you at the Jazz Showcase back when you were younger with Red Rodney, I think Gary Giles on the piano.
And, yeah, right. Right, that was when I was first. I was 18 when I joined Red Band.
Is that right? So yeah. Why don't we just talk, just to kind of get, since you're coming into the Jazz Showcase, you know, how important was that experience playing with a legend like that, and especially touring and traveling with him? I mean, that you know, it's not like once in a while. It's like every night you're playing that high of a level at that age. How important was that for you at that time?
So, I mean, it's a huge thing, of course. I mean, you know, just... I mean, that was my first introduction into what the jazz touring life is, you know. And it's one thing, you know, again, just sort of being on that kind of an international stage, seeing how Red set up, the order of the tunes, how he announced them, you know, how he kind of thought about the pacing of the set, you know, how he played every night, you know. It was a huge, huge learning thing. I don't even know, you know, how to begin. But just kind of watching him, you know, this is the best kind of school, at least I've found, you know, for an improviser, just being on the bandstand and just being around these people too. You know, so much history there, and I mean, Red was a serious character as well. So I kind of wish I could go back now with the perspective I have now, and I think I'd appreciate things on a whole other level even.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how did that gig even come about? I mean, he heard you playing somewhere? Because he could have had his pick of anybody, I would imagine.
Well, he came down to Columbia, South Carolina. That's where I grew up. Mm-hmm. He came down. There was sort of a jazz festival down there with a bunch of folks, that, you know, from around the States. And they set it up so I would have a chance to work with him, you know. And so that was, I guess, when I was 17 or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
He came down, and that was the first time that we had a chance to play. And I told him I was moving to New York. He said to give him a call, and I did. And, you know, he asked me to join his band. So I was amazed. And, you know, like a deer in headlights, but in a good way.
Oh, yeah. Well, and not only that, I mean, not only the music and stuff, but going on the road with, like, veteran musicians that have been on the road before, that had to be an incredible experience. Yeah. I mean, you know, because everything, they already knew the ropes, basically.
Right. Yeah, there's sort of a whole culture that goes with it, you know, which is something that I've grown to appreciate more and more as the years go by. You know, it's really kind of a community.
Well, and that's something that leads me into this. You know, I mean, you're not old, you know, in jazz terms at all, obviously, but you have all this experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, right?
All right.
But you have so much experience, and, you know, now I'm noticing, like, obviously with a lot of your different groups, even the underground, I think there were some guys that were playing clubs and stuff, but maybe they hadn't toured when you first started kind of taking them out on the road and stuff. And now looking over the band that you have here, these are younger, on the younger side guys. you feel like you're kind of passing that stuff along to these guys? Because there really, there's not a lot of, you know, a lot of ways for guys to get experience like you did even when you were growing
up. Yeah, no, I think it's a much different time for young musicians. I wish there was, you know, there were more opportunities just to play. Because, you know, as I was saying, that's really the kind of schooling that you can't buy. You know, it's, you just have to be up there playing night after night. But yeah, I mean, now I feel like I'm at a point. You know, Marcus and David are younger. I'm about the same age as Joe. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm sort of listening to these guys, and I'm realizing, you know, that they kind of came up with a slightly different perspective than I had, the same as I noticed that with the generation above me when I was coming up, you know. So, so I hope I'm giving them something. I know that I'm soaking it up every night and, you know, checking out all the music that they're interested in and the things that they're talking about, and just the way that they approach things. It's a little bit different. And it kind of makes me think of the same old things maybe in a new way. Too, you know, keeps it fresh.
Yeah. I mean, you know, thinking about that, especially stylistically, I'm sure. I mean, you know, because when you were with Red, I mean, that's bebop stuff, and then coming up that way and learning all that stuff. But then when you started your other groups, and you know, I'm just thinking of the underground specifically because of the funk-based stuff that you started incorporating in. And now with this new recording, The Dreamer Is the Dream on ECM. To me, it's this progression, and you're almost like a chameleon where you're able to play in all these different styles, but that's probably partly because of all the playing experience and all the different people you play with.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of music that I like, you know. There's a lot of different music. I like this, of course, you know, the whole history of jazz music, and then other kinds of music as well that I've been listening to and checking out for a long time. So I think it all comes out, you know, in different ways, in different situations. Maybe that'll emphasize a different aspect of my musical personality. Mm-hmm. You know, this is more of an acoustic sort of a quartet, and I had a different sound than the underground, maybe funk sound. I had a different sound in mind, a little, I wouldn't know how to say it, but, you know, hearkening back to, I mean, this. So many, you know, records that everybody's listened to, which have saxophone, piano, bass, and drums. So, trying to find a fresh way to approach that, and also use all the different influences, you know, from funk and Caribbean music and African music and Indian music and classical music and whatever, you know, just stir it around in the pot, see what comes out when I'm writing, see how it feels to play the tunes, you know. There's a lot about the performances, you know, they're things you can write down, but kind of the most important things are impossible to write down. You have to play the tune with other musicians, and preferably many, many times, you know, and you really get into a tune and what the possibilities are, and it starts gelling in ways that you don't even really imagine when you're writing it.
Well, and that was my, that's where listening to the new recording, because I've listened to a lot of your stuff, because I really enjoy it, and I always love seeing you when you come in town, or seeing you in New York, or wherever, because, I mean, it's always an experience, and it's always, you're always pushing the envelope, I feel, and listening to the new recording, it's almost like you're outside of all the different styles, because there are a lot of different styles. I sort of want to talk about that, but since we're talking about you know, everything, you know, as far as playing wise, I mean, it really feels like you're taking your playing to another level on this, meaning that you're pushing the instrument to a level that it's almost like you're pushing it, you're making it do things that it might not be able to do, you know? And that comes back to what you were talking about a minute ago. I mean, how do you go about, outside of the writing, and I want to get into that too, but how do you go about preparing the band to play this and record it? I mean, is this stuff that you guys were playing together for a while? But I don't think you've been playing with these guys all that long regularly, right?
No. Well, that was, you know, that kind of ties into the whole thing. I mean, I had really decided that I wanted this to be a band and make a recording, you know, kind of at the beginning of what I, 2016, I guess. So we did a bunch of touring in the winter and spring of 2016, and I brought in a bunch of music, you know, since I didn't know everybody's playing as well as maybe I know some other people's, I wasn't exactly sure what to write. I mean, I'm always writing thinking about the people that are going to be in the band and are going to play it. But in this case, I wasn't really sure what the direction should be, so I wrote a lot of music, which covers a pretty big stylistic range, you know?
Yeah.
And some of them ended up, you know, some of the things ended up getting edited a lot. Some of them we did keep the way they are. Some of them, you know, maybe I threw out or but I figured out a different way to do it, you know? So, and there's of course only a small sampling of that that's actually on the record, you know, that seemed to make a statement and kind of hang together by itself. You know, so it was a big process with the writing hand in hand with the playing, you know, but we did have a chance to go on the road and do a bunch of gigs. So that's, there really isn't any other way that the record would sound like it does without having done that.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there are so many different styles happening on this. When I, you know, the first listen to it, I had to listen to it a couple of times because it's one of those things where, like what you said earlier, I mean, you know, you're combining so many different styles in there. There's Latin stuff. I hear a lot of, there's time happening, but it's more of like a freestyle playing, almost like we're on a couple of tunes where you have some themes and then you're building off of the themes, which is a little bit different than what you've written in the past, I think. Is that...
Yeah. Well, you might be also surprised that what's on the paper, you know, might not even represent what you're hearing in a certain way. Like, it might be a certain cell of an idea that we use, but, you know, it just depends. And a lot of it, again, sounds the way it does because of the approach of Marcus and David and Joe. You know, if you had another set of players, it could sound very, very different.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the title. The Dreamer is the Dream. What's the significance of the title?
Those are the words that popped into my head when I thought of the first few notes of the melody. It goes, the dreamer is the dream, and that's as far as I got with the words. But that's what popped into my head. So I thought, okay, great, that's the name. And that ended up being the name of the record. So, you know, you can think of it on, you know, some different levels, I guess. But it really just popped into my head, and I went, "Oh, okay, great, thanks. I'll take it."
Well, you know that there'll be like some music theory guys deeply thinking about how deep you got with that whole thing. But now we know the truth.
Well,
right?
I hope.
Now, it sounds like, I mean, like taking it, you know, there's some tunes, like Heart and Hand, to me, is a lot of free playing, it sounds like. I mean, how do you go approaching, like, what's the process? Like, you write something and say, guys, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm thinking, because it seems like it's more open as opposed to, like, what is it, Limba? Of course, I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, right. Ilimba is in time through the whole thing, basically, except for the real short Ilimba intro that I do. But Heart and Hand, you know, and there are other things too. I generally write them with bar lines, you know, that thinking that there is kind of a rhythmic way of breaking it up. But then we kind of play it out of time, you know. Then we just kind of go with the phrasing. Phrase it however we want, you know, and eventually that particular one does get into time, but it takes a good few minutes before it gets there, and then it kind of disintegrates again at the end. You know, for me, I mean, having a lot of different varieties of texture is nice. Like, I like the fact that, okay, this is a very flowing, mostly out of time thing at first, and then the limbo is very rhythmic, you know, so it's not all one or the other, and they kind of set each other off, and hopefully if you hear it as a, you know, as a whole, then it says something different than if you just, you know, heard one tune on its own.
Right. No, I mean, sonically, I mean, when you listen to the whole album as a whole, it definitely does that, but that was one of the things that really surprised me, I guess, because there's so many different colors and textures happening on this recording. How many other, just out of curiosity, I mean, you must have had other tunes that you had, and how did you decide on these six to be on the recording?
Yeah, well, I mean, even at the studio, we recorded maybe 12 or 13 tunes, and which isn't the whole repertoire either, but but we recorded that, and then you know, it was really a matter of thinking, well, what do I want the record to be? What do I want it to represent? There were three tunes that I felt like were kind of the heart of the record, which before they had names, they were Dream 1, Dream 2, and Dream 3, which I kind of thought as these dream events when I wrote them, you know. So Dream 1 ended up being Heart and Hand, as you say. Dream 2 ended up being Memory and Desire. And Dream 3 ended up being The Dreamer is the Dream. So in a way, they were the, you know, sort of the linchpins to figure out what the rest of the record should be, and it seemed like the other tunes on there fit well as kind of a contrast to that. That was actually something that Manfred Eicher was very helpful with, and he often is, like, in terms of sequencing and what should be on, and maybe what isn't as important. You know, he kind of helped with that too.
Yeah. How, so actually let's talk a little bit about the band now, because the band's going to come with you to the Jazz Showcase, which is, you're going to be in town here June 1st through the 4th. And, so let's talk a little bit about the band. Is it the first time you're bringing this specific band into the showcase?
No, actually, we did a few nights there last year, right at the very beginning of the band's existence.
Okay.
When we were first kind of workshopping the stuff, so I'm sure we're in a much different place musically than we were then. It'll be interesting, you know, for folks that maybe heard that, and probably won't even sound like the same band.
So David Varelas is on piano.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Joe Martin on bass, and Marcus Gilmore will be there on the drums.
Okay, all right. And so that's Thursday through Sunday. Now, let's talk a little bit about what else, as far as putting this whole thing together and putting this band together and stuff. It's always curious to me, just from the ins and outs, and I know there's a lot of musicians listening to this and everything. You are on the road constantly, it seems. I've looked over your schedule, and you were in Europe for a long time, then you're back in the States, and you're traveling everywhere.
Yeah.
Is that something that you, and plus you have a family, so I mean, is that something that as a musician in 2017, it's kind of an essential thing to be out on the road? You can do all the social media you want, but really you need to be seen?
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, the social media is often to be able to get the gigs, and hopefully people will, you know, show up. But if you don't have any gigs, then there's nothing for them to show up to. So, I feel fortunate that at least I'm in a position to be able to keep the band working, you know, at least, you know, some of the year, because it's very hard, you know. It's just very hard to keep a schedule full enough, you know, now, and I mean, with the fact that there's much less revenue from recorded music that comes in, you know, we all really rely on live playing, and it's impossible to, you know, to stay in one place and do that. So my friends and I that, you know, are in this, you know, aspect of the business, we're all moving around a lot, because that's the only way to really be able to play this creative music and, you know, have enough gigs and also make enough money to pay the rent doing it. So that's, you know, there are obviously nice things about going on the road. You end up having all these experiences and meeting a bunch of people you maybe wouldn't have met, you know, being able to introduce the music to people that maybe wouldn't hear it otherwise. Obviously, it makes life a little difficult in other ways, you know, after you're on the road for a long time and, you know, you come home and your daughter's like, yeah, what? Who are you again? You know, so, but you learn to, you know, to take the good with the bad.
Yeah, well, I also think, I mean, in the States, there's been a lot of changes as far as the clubs and things go. Luckily, you have an established name, so you can get into the main clubs in all the cities and things like that. But, I mean, for somebody that's coming up, that's going to music school, and I know that you probably teach lessons when you're in town and do clinics and work with a lot of different younger kids. I mean, what's some advice for you, from you to them, as far as, you know, if they're going into music school or something? I mean, what's some of the stuff that they should be kind of thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a huge subject, you know, because there's so much to do with the music itself. And I would say focus as much as you can on the music. You know, I mean, there's so much now that's expected of any artist. You know, as you said, like the social media, there's so many things that can take up your day. You know, mm-hmm. And they're important. You know, but if the music isn't first, you know, then maybe you might want to think about, that, because, I mean, you know, I seems like sort of a luxury now, but when I was coming up, really, you know, it was just all about practicing all day and listening and hanging out and, you know, getting better and better at the craft. And, I do believe at the end of the day that the very best, folks will find a way to get heard. You know, mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's not easy. It's, you know, it never has been easy, and no one who goes into music trying to do it for a living, you know, should be under any illusions that it's, you know, that it's an easy path. But if you know that and you have to do it, you know, there's nothing else you want to do, then, you know, you find some way to make it work. And it might not be exactly the way that you imagined, you know, but there are still ways to make a living playing creative music in different ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, go for it if you have to. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that whole thing, I mean, no matter what era you're in, you still have to practice and you still have to be really good at your craft in order to do things. Yep. I mean, it's not, you know, there isn't any mystery behind that, that's for sure.
Yeah, it just takes a lot of work and a vision, you know, but also a lot of lucky things. But you can sometimes encourage the lucky things by, you know, showing up and also doing your homework.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking some time with us today. Again, it's Chris Potter. He's coming into the Jazz Showcase June 1st through the 4th. And then, of course, his new recording, The Dreamer is the Dream, is out on ECM Records. And, by the way, this is your third release on ECM or second?
Yes, third.
Third. Okay. How's it been? I mean, because you moved over to ECM, and that is a label that seems to work really well with the style of music you're playing.
Yeah, it's been a nice relationship. It's been working out well. And, you know, there are very few labels left that are even putting jazz music out. So I'm happy to, you know, to have someone behind me that'll help out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we look forward to seeing you in town next week. And, Chris, I really appreciate it. And thanks again.
All right.